Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
I need to lose weight. Diet. Deprivation. Misery. Ugh.
What if you could lose weight without feeling awful? R3 Weight Loss by Susan Torberg is the real food plan you've been dreaming about. No calorie counting or journaling. A doable plan for real life. With R3 Weight Loss, you'll break those sugar and carb cravings but still be able to eat things you love, teaching you discipline and managing your weight for life. Visit r3weightlossplan.com. $39 will change your life.
Everybody, and welcome to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio 980 on your dial. 15 and a half minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock. Fresh after a Lowell Spinners loss tonight, unfortunately. I believe the score was 12-6 if you're just joining us. And we will be here until at least 11 o'clock. What do you got, Cindy? Anything? Just gotta check in to see what time this
show... So you can go to 11:15 tonight.
Show ends at 11:15. Okay, so we'll have 10:15 to 11:15 is our show tonight. You never know what it will be with the Lowell Spinners playing. And I understand that next week will be the last Lowell Spinners game before a Beneath the Surface show. I don't know if they're making the playoffs. I haven't followed closely the Spinner season, but I hope they do. And I wish them good luck. Our phone number here at Beneath the Surface Radio is 978-454-4980. That's 978-454-4980. We are a show that tries to bring a little sanity into a world that has officially entered the era of insanity. To bring a little life into our culture of death. Tonight we go beneath the surface on the topic of common sense. What is it, and why is it so uncommon? And to help us delve beneath the surface on this topic, as my headphones go haywire, am I still on the air?
Yes, you are.
Isn't that nice? Is Mr. Robert LeBlanc and Mr. John Tudoris. And
hey, John. How you doing, John?
To join us in our conversation as we get going in this interesting topic. Our phone number here at BTS Radio is 978-454-4980. That's 978-454-4980. Bob, could you touch that wire and see if I can get my headphones back at all? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. A little bit. Off and on. But anyway, you can either phone us at that phone number or write us your thoughts anonymously at facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers. That's facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers. Gentlemen, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good.
Now, what does that mean? Are you speaking?
Okay, I guess you asked, yeah. Gentlemen, and I, yes. And John is actually not in the studio.
In the studio yet. Yeah. Yeah. So you had to tell everyone that.
Yes, I did.
Okay. All right. So this is what we do. See, we're expecting him any second. He called and he said his GPS said that he'd be here at 10:10, and we know it's a little later than that now. But I want you to do his voice.
I cannot do his work.
No, I'm sorry. You're going to have to.
Oh, gee. Yep. I don't know how to think like John.
You know? As I introduce you to the audience now, I want you to be both John and Bob until he walks in. Okay?
Oh, gee.
All right.
How can I be John? John is so unique.
If you can't do his voice, just try to do his personality.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think I could capture his personality.
It's easier to do his voice than his personality?
I don't know. There he is. I can't say that.
You just wrecked it. You just wrecked it. It would have been fun if he just started doing John.
It's quite all right.
John Tesaurus Tudoris, how are you?
Fantastico.
Good. I'm glad you made it tonight.
I am too.
Yes.
I am so happy you made it here.
Glad tonight. Are we. Yeah. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. We have as our guests tonight, as you already heard them, John Tesoros and Mr. Bobbert. And my name is Paul Morano. The topic we're going beneath the surface on tonight, common sense. What is it, and why is it so uncommon? Well, gentlepersons, let me begin by talking a little bit about Aristotle, because Aristotle is, I believe, the one that in ancient times came up with this notion of common sense. It's a little different than how we have, how the term has evolved over the centuries. Now, he mentions that there must be one singular power that distinguishes between the sensual impressions of the five senses, and that come from the various senses, a common sensitive organ that is the roots of all sensual organs and activities. Now, that might sound a little...
What does that mean, Paul?
Yeah, that might sound a little confusing. So let me go down a little bit, and here's another sentence I picked out of it. He says, it is by the common sense that we are aware of our own life and that we can distinguish between objects of different senses. Judgment and discrimination of sensual objects belong to the common sense. All right? So this is what I understand him to understand about the common sense, or common sense.
So
he believes, I understand Aristotle believes it to be in the genre of a physical organ like the rest of the five senses, but one that is like a network that is able to network the five senses and interpret the five senses from each other. So in other words, if you're smelling a sweet smell and you're touching a scaly fish, you inside have a, if you will, a sixth sense or a common sense to distinguish between what you feel and what you smell. Does that make any sense?
Are we talking about the organ of the brain?
At this moment, I'm not exactly sure what Aristotle is talking about, but I don't think we're talking about the organ of the brain. I think he's looking at it as a kind of a sixth sense that networks or pulls together all five senses so that...
It kind of sounds like a brainish sort of thing.
I think it might be good to maybe approach this from a slightly different way, because if I'm listening, I might think this is kind of abstract, and that's why I never took philosophy.
You never took philosophy?
No, actually, I have. Okay. I think the key with Aristotle is that he understood us as receiving knowledge starting first with our sense interaction with the world.
Right.
For example, we see things, we get data that way, we touch, we taste.
Yeah.
All these things combine to us receiving data. And then, so that's where this sense part comes in. And then where it's common is with the idea of abstraction, right? So for example...
No, I just want to say that Aristotle doesn't see abstraction of the senses,
right? Because
as the common sense, he sees the common sense as something different.
I seem to remember associated with that, he was actually just talking about animals in general, and not the rational animal.
Yeah, I think even animals have a common sense according to Aristotle.
Right.
So it's on the sensual level, not the intellectual level that he speaks of here. And it's not easy to understand what he's talking about, but it's he considers it a sense of which we are able to distinguish the impulses of the five senses.
Okay.
So it would be on more of the instinctual level then?
Yes.
For example, the way a certain animal might teach their offspring how to do things, but that's built into their nature. For example, birds how to make a nest.
Yeah, or even it distinguishes within the bird or within the bear or within the antelope what he feels in terms of touch, what he sees with his eyes, what he hears with his ears, as all different from each other, as all distinct from each other.
Cool. So how is this getting... So we have Aristotle with common sense. So
yeah.
how does that relate to the type of horse sense, common sense that people think of nowadays.
It seems that somehow this notion of judging and discriminating the objects of our five senses is what the common sense does. has evolved to not being so much a physical sense, but more a way of reasoning.
Yes. What I see quite a bit is common sense being associated with sound judgment, and probably I think there's a connection with tradition as well.
But I want us, at least right now, to appreciate. Notice how the term itself has to do with sense.
Right.
Has to do with sense knowledge, which are the five senses. They're bodily, they're physical. That's where it came from, even though now we see the term common sense as not necessarily meaning sense as in the five senses, but a common understanding, a common... Today it sort of means an obvious way of understanding or intuiting something that doesn't take all that much thought.
Okay.
Right?
Well, that all involves the power of abstraction in the mind as well, too.
Okay.
And I think that...
Now we get there.
Yeah, now we get there. So I suppose the question is if this sort of common sense type reasoning is lacking, why is that?
Well, we haven't got there yet, whether it's lacking or not. I'm just trying to build.
Really?
Yeah, I'm just. No, I mean in the show. I'm just trying to understand what common sense means.
Sure.
So now we can say that common sense means a kind of very simple reasoning that everybody can see.
It's also attached to epistemology, which is a big word for the study of knowledge. And so, from what I've looked up, what I've researched, is that common sense is viewed by rationalists or scientists as something that can be easily led astray, which is different from the meaning that John was talking about. And so there's a tendency, I think, for people in the sciences to say, well, common sense is not all that good. You need something more than that quick reasoning, so to speak.
So common sense is something that all human beings share, right?
Well,
the way we understand common sense now, everybody over seven has a some degree of common sense. And I say over seven because that's the age of reason.
5 to 7-ish.
Yeah.
4 to 7.
So would you agree with that? That all human beings that aren't mentally challenged have a certain degree of common sense.
I would agree with that.
Give me an example of what common sense is.
We'll start with something obvious. You're walking down a pathway. You see a dog doo-doo. You step around it or you step over it.
That's just common sense.
Very
good.
Don't step in the doo-doo.
and the reason is because there are obvious reasons for that anybody can see. All right.
Don't step in front of a moving car.
Common sense. Because it's not a good thing to get hit.
Right.
And break your legs and so forth. So, and every human being kind of knows this.
Right.
Give me something that's a little, just a tiny bit less obvious than that, but still considered common sense.
Hot pot on the stove. Don't touch it.
Don't touch it?
Yep. Kids actually, that's something where our sense interaction usually comes into play because... Yeah. The idea of hotness and coldness may not be fully ingrained, and only when we actually feel that something is hot, then that leads more into it.
Well, this is something interesting because I can actually say that I have tried to test out that thesis of a hot stove and remember the painful reaction from it. So common sense could be actually said to come from
experience. So, okay, let's think about that for a sec. So common sense, as we understand the term today, can come from two ways. Very simple thought that everyone shares, even down to the age of 7 years old, or a common experience that everyone has had in their life, like touching something hot. So when you combine those things and those simple truths that everybody shares pretty much, they're just common sense. Right?
Yeah.
All right. So now let's, John Tesaurus, now let's get to your point of a few minutes ago. Do you believe, now think about this, I don't want to be such a naysayer as I often hear myself sound like on this show, that everything is negative, in postmodern times, which for the large part is true, especially the topics we've talked on our show. But do you think that in the 21st century that we have lost a great deal of common sense?
Yes and no.
All right, give me both.
I'll try and give it quick. Right. Yes, in that there does seem to be a disconnect between that basic, sort of reasoning that goes into understanding things like don't step in the doo-doo, don't touch the hot pot, that type of common sense, with bigger ideas too. For example, abortion.
The most controversial topic there is, a moral issue there is today.
Pretty much.
Okay.
I would say so. And with all sorts of its tangential things that surround it. But common sense would say 100 years ago, that's a child in the womb. Don't kill the child. And nowadays, it seems to be quite common for, or at least common enough, that you'll find a fair amount of people who say, it's okay, even if they recognize that it's a child in the womb, which, of course, there's a bit of contradiction in there.
Now, I'm a little confused. Before we get to the contradiction, I'm a little confused as now to the meaning of common sense, because is common sense that which is common amongst the people at a certain time, a certain place in history?
Oh, no.
Okay, because that's sort of what you sounded like then. You're saying, well, now it's common sense that, X,
well,
Y, and Z.
It isn't common sense. That's okay. The whole thing. It's
common thought, but not common sense. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Okay.
There's a disconnect. You ask a young child, you point to a mother who is pregnant, and what will they say? That's a baby in there. They recognize already that that's a baby in there.
Right, right. A child.
Right. And so the point, I suppose, of me bringing up something like abortion, for example, is it highlights where there is a disconnect on something that should be obvious, that should be commonsensical, but which is blatantly denied outright. And so there is a yes and a no there. The other is that we sometimes get a historical disconnect.
Yeah.
So it's sometimes prominent for us to say, well, this time is different than the other time, so there must be something different. But then common sense is part of, I think, our human nature. And so regardless of our time, It exists in there.
Yeah.
I just heard you go in a circle, full circle there. Landing in a place that told me that common sense detects objective truth regardless of time or space or historical context.
Yes.
So then in the year 1415, a lot of people could have believed something commonly, And it could have been false, whereas today a lot of people could be believing something, and that could be false. So the common belief of a people does not necessarily detect the common sense of a people. Is that right, Bob?
I think you're correct there, but I actually want to, I guess, say that sometimes our experience, because we included experience in common sense, might lead us astray. And I think that's part of the thing that takes us away from common sense, or relying on common sense.
Wow. That's interesting that you say that, because in my ethics class, I very often tell the class that your experience sometimes will help you with these ethical issues, and very often will do just the opposite.
Yeah,
because very often people have had harmful experience, or experience of which that made them have a skewed understanding of something, or the person of a certain race hurt them, so all people of this race are idiots.
Yes.
That kind of thing, that kind of nonsense. This person has a disordered desire for X or Y. And because that's all they've known in their experience, they believe that it's common sense that it's okay for me to act upon X or Y. So experience can be a two-edged sword, can it be?
Yeah. And looking at some of the people who are opposed to the idea of common sense, they want everybody to think of everything deeply in sort of using a scientific method. And one of the examples that I encountered was the idea of heavier objects falling quicker than lighter objects, which in experience that's true. If you take a bowling ball and compare it to a fluffy pillow, it seems like the bowling ball will land first. I mean, there's that kind of experience that kind of
because leads, it's heavier.
Yeah, it lands faster because it's heavier, but science, quote unquote, shows otherwise, that the gravity would produce the same sort of acceleration for a heavy object or
for a lighter one.
And that they, you had, I forget who it was, but I wish I could remember, but they
Newton? Did,
no, it wasn't Newton.
Okay.
Galileo?
Leaning Tower of Pisa. It was in the cartoon.
Right. Yeah, it was in the cartoon. But it was the proof that a lighter object fell at the same rate as a heavy object. And they point to that as saying, well, this is where common sense
fails.
And that's what they kind of want people to move away from that sort of thinking, at least be open. I think a good idea would be open to the idea that maybe common sense fails. So there is, I guess, that other side that says, common sense, that's a bad thing,
Yeah, and you shouldn't trust it.
You shouldn't trust it.
Don't trust your senses.
Right, and there's I think it's also related to the problem that we've had since Descartes, which is we don't have certain knowledge with common sense, and that's how it's related to knowledge.
So common sense cut off from right reason is not reliable.
That's a very good way of putting it, yes.
So common sensual experience divorced from right reason is not a reliable thing.
Right. And I think what we get, especially I'm a person who really looks toward tradition. I'm really with Chesterton when time tested, tradition is the democracy of the dead.
Of the dead, yeah.
And so You can look at certain things and learn from tradition in a way, and that would feed into our common sense. And really, in a certain way, it's not completely rational, because what often happens, especially in the modern age, is a person will propose something new.
Yeah.
Say, let's tear down this, institution.
Okay.
And the answer for a traditionalist will be, I have no idea why we did this all the time. And they can't really adequately defend it, because it's not really something that has been thought through by them individually.
It kind of sounds like the whole same-sex marriage thing, doesn't it?
Yes. We're going to try something that I think most traditionalists would know is an extremely foolish thing.
Well, it's never been tried in the history of humanity.
Right.
And it's and all of a sudden, people today can't understand for the life of them why such blatant discrimination has occurred throughout all of human history up to the year 2000.
Right.
Isn't that very strange?
It is very strange.
The democracy of the dead, as you call it, would find that overwhelmingly a very bad idea.
Well, I love Chesterton. Chesterton actually has kind of a formula to know whether a reform is a good reform or not.
Yeah.
He talks about a reformer walking up to a field, and he discovers a fence with a gate in it. And the reformer goes, well, I don't see the need of this. Let's remove it.
Yeah.
And Chesterton's answer to that is to say, until you see the need of that, you can't remove it, because it must be there for some particular reason. Mm. And I think we see this continually in our modern age, where people propose, I don't understand why we have this.
Yeah.
Let's get rid of it.
Well, yes. That's the danger of progressivism run amok. The idea that you're progressing and progressing towards this ambiguous betterment, but what is it really that you're progressing for? What is it to be better? And these questions really aren't asked. Some are actually assumed. Actually, Chesterton even commented on the idea of the dangers of progressivism, where the object itself is just to be progressive. But if you don't have an idea of what you're progressing forward to, which is the good, then you're going to run amok, and your reason won't be well, what's the term? Won't be put to good use.
So that's another thing after the break we could talk a little bit more about, whether this notion of common sense is something that, if it is real, it has to match something to which we are going towards, a good of which we are going towards, rather than an evil. In other words, what is the object of common sense? All right, I promise it's going to get a little better than this. After next break, we'll get into some more real-life discussion about the notion of common sense and where we as a culture have gone astray from it. It's not all that uncommon anymore. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. I'm Paul Morano. This is Beneath the Surface. You're listening to WCAP Radio. We'll be back right after this. We're back. You're listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. 17 minutes before the hour of 11 o'clock. And we are talking about a very common sense topic. And that is common sense. Is it all that common anymore? My guests, John Tudorus and Bob LeBlanc. And Bob, could you touch that wire again so that I can get my headphones back? Off and on, off and on. Can't do a show without headphones that go off and on. Okay, it's on now. All right. So where were we before the break? John, you're trying to say something that common sense has to do with right reason, and the only way that you know something is right in terms of whether it be common sense or not is if it points to a particular good. What are you progressing towards? That, you say, is one of the more important questions to ask regarding human activity.
Oh, absolutely. Everything has a purpose. People have purposes. This equipment in the studio has a purpose, and it's good in so much as that it fulfills its intended purpose. Hmm. And when it doesn't progress towards its intended purpose, then that's when you would get evil or a privation of good in this sense.
So then we have to know what a human being's intended purpose is in order to understand common sense. That's what I'm hearing now.
That's definitely included part and parcel with it. If we don't know what our purpose is, then by virtue of that, it actually colors our reasoning and how we see other things in the world.
So this gets into the whole notion of teleology. You know, all things have a purpose. What is ours? Before we get into that question, a little side question here, Bob. Can we understand human beings having a purpose if there is no God that created and designed us?
Yeah, that seems very difficult to me, because I'm not sure if that can be made. Some of the things that I've seen is people who do not believe in God. Not believe in any sort of teleology. They don't see any end, and they almost want to forbid the word purpose.
I tell you what, though. With those same people, they do recognize many purposes relating to human... Like, for example, what is the purpose of a beating heart?
Right.
What is the purpose of a calf muscle? What is the purpose of a stomach?
No. I agree. I think the eye is the best example. Yeah. You know, we know yeah. what the purpose,
the purpose
of the eye
is. It's to see.
Is to see. And you know, they and if there's a blind person and if there's some sort of cure for that, you know, they'll try, you know, they'll say we need to fix it. There's some yeah. sort of cure for this, or even for deafness, you know, they've got these cochlear implants to kind of correct the fact that people can't hear.
So then if the parts of us are operating properly, then we are fulfilling our purpose?
Well, we're talking about individual organs, and then the complete organism altogether is something to different. I mean, I think all the individual organs are contributing toward the goal of the yeah. overall organism.
Yes. Yes.
So, what the overall organism points toward is the good, capital G, good.
Right. So right now, I think everyone is thinking to themselves, optimal health contributes to optimal happiness. But with the human organism, which is different than the animal or the plant organism, we also have a spiritual component that we call intellect and will.
Right.
That has the powers of intellect and free will. So then, John, when we as a human organism experience something or think of something as common sense, how does that relate to the end or purpose of the organism?
If I may, I'm just going to back up a little and maybe comment a little bit on what you mentioned there on the intellect and will, which is the spiritual component of man. So that is not something that would reside necessarily in the matter of us. It has an immaterial nature. And that immaterial nature, because it doesn't have matter, does not fade. So I'll give you a quick throwback to good old Plato in his Republic there, and the character of Socrates in there notes that the highest, so people have basically three main parts. There's your lowest part, your sensual appetites and things like that. Then there's your passions. There's also the part that governs all that, your intellect, your will, and the idea that wisdom actually can rule everything else in right order. So
there could not be self-discipline if there wasn't something disciplining the self.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that immaterial, in a certain sense, immortal part of us has, by de facto reasoning, the governing portion over the lower parts.
Yes.
The material body that fades away. I mean, if we want optimal health, well, eventually we die. So that in itself would say, well, okay, it's good to have health for us, but at some point we die. So is there something beyond that? If our minds is part of our certain immortalness to our nature, but we ourselves are created, where does that come from? What are we progressing towards?
Okay.
So there's a certain type of happiness that we can have here if we operate in a prudent manner.
Okay, now when you say when we operate, that relates to free will, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, it does.
Okay, I mean, we don't just operate out of instinct.
That's
correct. Like other animals.
Yeah.
So then, all human beings have five common senses, all healthy ones. I mean, some of us might be a little more colorblind than others, maybe a little hard of hearing. All that being said, we all have five senses. We all experience the world a certain way. Now, the problem is, even though we have a common five senses, getting back to our original point here, we don't seem, especially today, we don't, in our day of the modern Tower of Babel, we don't seem to have a common reasoning. We don't interpret the data we get from our senses in a common way anymore.
I think this goes back to the earlier subtopic we had on progressing towards what? And in a certain sense, a throwing away of the giants that came before us that Bob was talking about in Chesterton. And think about how Aristotle and much of what he wrote is foundational upon Western education, and yet he gets nary a glance at all. And there's enough that we utilize, but that's it. We don't actually enter into the fuller body of knowledge of really gift that he's handed on through time to us, but not just him. There's others as well too.
So there's a Western intellectual tradition that that a lot of us today have been cut off from.
And okay. there have been some who've tried to resurrect this. There's Mortimer Adler, who's to some degree another credited with the Great Books Program type of education.
But what about? I mean, in most times and ages, most people aren't academic. There are a lot of regular people out there that, up until relatively recently, have utilized their five senses, their common experience, and have interpreted their experience through their senses in a similar way. Bob, it doesn't seem to happen anymore.
Right. And my thinking here is that we've moved away from the virtues. Earlier I brought up that common sense seemed to be related to sound judgment.
Yeah.
And to me, that sounds like the virtue of prudence.
And a lot of people today, when they hear the word prudence, they think of prude. So why don't you define the real definition?
It's practical wisdom.
Okay.
We have wisdom where you can talk about abstract things and you can philosophize and you can talk about the deep questions, but practical wisdom is just having this wisdom that where the rubber meets the road, as an analogy. You're applying your intelligence to ordinary day-to-day operation of saying this is good, this is bad, this is evil, this is immoral,
and the ability to do the right thing in the here and now.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not something that's really high up philosophizing sort of stuff. That's something that everybody is capable of having and building up.
Now, I remember as a kid, Bob, most people had that commonly.
Yes.
And hence, this is what people called common sense. Today, you put something in front of somebody's face, metaphorically, I'm speaking, and you get two completely different answers as to what it is.
Right.
What is going on here?
Yeah, it seems to be, there seems to be an abandonment. And in fact, we've seemed to retreated. One of Plato's big questions that he was contending with is, you know, does knowledge cure evil? You know, that seems to be making a huge sort of comeback these days, where if we just educate people, all the evil will be gone in the world.
It's interesting. If my memory is correct, Plato did believe that the only reason somebody was to do evil is because they had some kind of lack of knowledge.
Right.
Whereas Augustine said, no, that's not the case. He said that even if you had the perfect knowledge about something, evil is choosing what you know to be wrong.
Right.
Yeah. So free will can choose what they know to be wrong, according to Augustine.
Yes. Yeah. He had that great example of stealing, of all things that he felt guilty about, stealing pears from a pear tree was something that really got him. He's going, I knew it was wrong, I did it, and oh, gee, I wish I could take it back.
If I may, just on that Plato reference, because this is one of the things that has struck me a bit. If anyone has encountered any works of Plato, most likely it's that allegory of the cave.
Yeah.
Where in the Republic, there's this odd scene where all these people are shackled their entire life looking in this cave at these shadows on the wall with these strange voices. And because that's all they see, they think it's reality. And
They know nothing different.
They know nothing different. And so, of course, someone is freed from that. They are forced out into the light, where by the light of the sun, they encounter reality. And then, of course, they have this obligation to teach others at some point. And that's pretty much all people get. So there's a certain sense of picking and choosing from the work of Plato. What is often never gotten to is, what is the ultimate object of of the knowledge of what you're progressing towards. And that, in Plato, is actually the good with a capital G, which I find very interesting, that in itself is omitted. What is it to be good? This right orderedness of things.
So common sense has to do with right order in choosing the good.
Absolutely. Everything, and even things that aren't man-made, things that have a nature, right? Dogs have a purpose. Trees have a purpose. Grass, the insects, dirt, everything that exists has some purpose.
Okay.
That of fulfilling its nature.
And if a thing, an object, whether it be living or not living, is able to fulfill its very nature, is this what at least analogously is called happiness?
Analogously, I would say yes.
I mean, if a tree, it doesn't get chopped down, it doesn't get caught in a fire, it's an oak tree grows all the way up to maturity and lays its acorns and so forth, and it fulfills its nature as a tree. Is this the purpose, the ultimate goal of that particular object?
Oh, it is.
Okay. So in an analogous sense, then that tree would be, its nature would be fulfilled, and if it had an intellect and a free will, it would be happy. Right?
Yes, it would. Okay. And the key on this is to understand happiness is not just some fleeting emotion where you're looking at a little chart with all these little emoticons and then looking at the, are you sad? Are you happy? It's not just the smiley face. It's something that's integral to our being.
And that's why I mentioned the tree, because it fulfills its nature. And that seems to be what you're talking about happiness is. It's the fulfillment of our being as a human being.
Absolutely. I mean, think about our founding documents, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The founding fathers weren't talking about just this whimsical notion. I mean, who puts that in key documents like a Declaration of Independence that we want to pursue happiness if it's just something fleeting like a smile on my face during the day?
Yeah,
it's something much deeper than that.
But I think, gentlemen, there was a presumption in those three elements, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, when they wrote that. People back in those days, and even of the Enlightenment era mentality that they had, did believe in an objective truth. In other words, there was liberty had to do with being free to do the good. Pursuing happiness had to do with the freedom to pursue what objectively makes a human being happy. Today, and I think this might begin to answer our questions that we're getting at about common sense not being all that common. Today, there is no objective good. There is no objective happiness. And to have liberty and to attempt to pursue happiness is completely divorced from human nature. And everybody sort of is on their own trying to say, what will make me as an individual happy? Without thinking any further than that, Bob.
There's that very famous Justice Kennedy quote in Casey versus
Bob,
Planned Parenthood.
You have huge. Read my mind, because I was actually going to ask you about that.
And that's huge, because that really sums up modern life.
Yes,
but go ahead.
Well, I'm really going to paraphrase it, because I don't have the exact quote.
John will help you if you mess it up.
Okay.
I'm relying on Bob for this one.
So basically, we are to determine by our own selves what will fulfill ourselves, what will bring us happiness.
And I think he said something more like, everybody has a right to define their own reality.
Yes, there is something like that to it. Yes, exactly. You're right.
Isn't that the definition of insanity?
Yeah, it is. And that's why I open up Beneath the Surface on Monday night saying that we are offering some sanity in the era of insanity that we have entered. And I believe that.
It is
the definition of insanity.
Just think about it. If we applied Justice Kennedy's words against him, it says, my reality will be perfectly okay if he never said that. actually, what he's asking for is contradictory.
And law, our civil law, simply becomes the power of the state to stop you from hurting other people. It has nothing to do with the right ordering of human life. For the good of everybody.
I think it goes even further than that. I think we're not there yet, but we see a disintegration where might becomes right.
Yeah, that's the stronger rules.
Yeah.
Yeah, and who's ever in power gets to make the laws, and it's not based on anything objective. Therefore, we can make whatever laws we want to make, and it makes no sense. It's not.
It doesn't make sense to us. I think for those who are the strong, they're willing to say, "Well, it makes sense to me because I'm not being hurt by this, and I might actually benefit by this."
Well, the slave owner says the same thing.
Right.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to him.
And I wanted to
subjectively that is
yes. I wanted to add to that though. Oh darn! And I forgot my train of thought. Can you bring me back here?
what were we talking about? Do we need to take a break at 11, Cindy? No. Okay. Fantabulous.
Wait, we're going beyond 11.
We're going beyond 11.
To 11, wow.
15.
Yeah, 11:15
this
tonight.
This is great.
Yeah, it wasn't common sense to you that we'd have an hour show.
Wow, I thought I got here late, but maybe...
Dialogue about... we're just three guys dialoguing about this notion of common sense, trying to understand it, and trying to understand especially why it's not all that common today. 978-454-4980 if you want to get involved in our conversation. 978-454-4980. All right. Gentlemen, what's the biggest reason why common sense is so uncommon today?
Actually, I think you already hit on it.
All right.
You
underscore
alluded,
it.
Yeah, well, you...
Magnify it, Jontosaurus.
Magnify! So, starting with the Enlightenment philosophers and really heading more towards now in the present, the idea that objective reality is not the pursuit, is not what knowledge is heading towards, but rather that we, in a certain sense... determine reality.
Yeah, each individual.
Each
more
individual.
And more. Yeah.
Right, and of course that's you know hogwash. It's a big pile of horse manure.
Well, basically, radical democracy is basically a totalitarianism of the individual, isn't it?
The dictatorship of relativism.
Well, it eventually becomes, leads towards it.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, Plato in his Republic, and in case people are wondering why all these Republic references are coming up, is because I just finished a class on it.
I figured that, actually.
Interestingly enough, when he goes through all the various governmental types, the one that comes right after democracy is a totalitarian-type government, that it naturally progresses towards that.
Yeah.
By its nature, if it's ruled by the masses.
Yeah, see, when you get to democracy, if you don't have a moral people that seeks happiness according to the objective order of life, then you are going to get chaos, and it is inevitably, Bob, will turn into totalitarianism.
Yeah, if you need a self-governing people to be a self-governing people, and I did not say a tautology there, but what I meant was is that... people need to have self-discipline. They need to be built up in the virtues and govern themselves.
Each individual has to govern themselves properly, yeah.
Properly, in order for you to have the democratic form of government where they people as a whole rule themselves.
That is so profound, yet so simple.
Well, I think Bob's really on the right path there with that, and that actually leads towards, well, if we find that there's something wrong... how do you remedy it?
Mm.
And so with the virtues, I think Aristotle had it right. Start people early. Because once you're an adult and you have a lot of these ingrained habits, they're hard to break.
Wait. I'm going to devil's advocate you here. If we're not born with these virtues, then, I mean, aren't they foreign to us? Why get into them? Especially if you don't get pleasure out of them.
Oh, you do get pleasure.
Okay, wait, then...
but it's a rightly ordered pleasure.
Then what are the virtues?
Oh, virtues, what? You mean like prudence, which we covered a bit?
No, that's an example of a virtue.
Okay.
What is a virtue? I don't want an example of a virtue. I want a definition of virtue.
All right,
I'll help you out.
Well, it has to do with habituation.
Yeah. Virtue is a good habit, isn't it?
Yes, it's a good habit.
It's a habit of which, if you practice it... you will become a better human being.
Right. It properly disposes you to do the right thing.
And the more you do the right thing, the happier you become.
Yes. Yeah. Here's the great thing. One of my, my things is contraception. And this is where we talk about something that does something for us. It's like a diet pill, you know, for a person, and it doesn't really help a person actually eat well or discipline himself to say, no, I'm not going to have those cookies or candies. When the same way contraception acts like something that is a short circuit of the virtue of chastity.
So then virtue is living the right way for optimal health and happiness.
Right, but I want to kind of follow through on this thought.
Yep. Okay.
So what happens for a person who does not try to live the virtue of chastity? So they do all these shortcuts and they don't really tend toward the good. So what happens when there's a temptation that they have, some sort of temptation for them to do the wrong thing? Are they really strong enough to fight that temptation?
I think what you're saying is without the virtues, you are simply a weak wimp, obsessed, perhaps addicted, and unhappy person.
Yes. I think a person who is lost in vices, they understand evil very, very well, and they understand that they're really a slave to whatever their addiction is.
Yes.
They know that they're not free.
And Paul, if I was someone ruled by my passions and my lower portions, I would say, how mean of you to say the things that you said.
Yes.
But the truth is, you're not actually saying that as an insult. Those are actually characteristics that happen to people who are enslaved to vices.
Yeah, they hear something as very, very mean and insulting when they're in the midst of it.
Sure.
Yeah, when they hear, when somebody is sick, very often when they hear the cure, they get all rambunctious and angry at you.
Or if they hear the symptoms, then they might say, well, you're insulting me. Well, no, those are actually the symptoms of bad behavior.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like denial has a lot to do with vice. There seems to be a relationship.
Stuart Smalley, Cleopatra is not the only queen of denial.
Yes, that's
concupiscence darkens the intellect is the big fancy term of saying sin makes you stupid.
You two are using terms that are traditionally used in theology. Sin, concupiscence, intellect and will. Could you say that the bottom line here in the 21st century is that those who have rejected God have ipso facto rejected reason?
That's a natural conclusion. Aquinas would say that, and this is not just Aquinas the theologian, this is Aquinas the philosopher using right reason.
There is something about the Christian faith that I think really illumines the right way to go. The illumines the good. What I'm trying to say is that men can, through right reason, come up with what we're talking about right now.
It's possible theoretically.
It's possible theoretically.
Yeah. Because we all have intellect.
We all have intellect, but I think without Christianity, you have most of the people in Plato's cave. They're in the dark. They
Well, how did they get there?
They got there. I think
they never said. they actually.
No. I don't mean in Plato's cave. I'm talking about the analogy of Plato. How are people who are living the metaphor of Plato's cave today?
I think we explain that theologically by original sin.
Yes.
Yeah.
We have, in some form, way, or fashion, we have separated mankind as a whole from God.
And that blinds us to a certain degree.
Yeah, we're blind to the good. We actually don't, we're not easily able to determine right from wrong.
Or truth from falsehood.
Or truth from falsehood,
And there you have the intellect and the will. The intellect is darkened, the will is weakened. Those two spiritual components of the human person have been diminished because of what theology understands as original sin. Therefore, go ahead, John.
I was going to say just real briefly that touching on back on the point of how lack of belief in God, if I'm recalling your comment correctly, leads to a darkening of reason where it doesn't function properly. It's important to see that in context, that reason actually gets us to the point of knowing that God is omnipotent, he's all powerful, he is this first principle of everything. And we know this because we see this in the works of, for example, of Aristotle, who did not have interaction with the only monotheistic culture of his day, ancient Israel. Separated from that, we know that reason can come to this point. And here's the interesting thing is that revelation, so that's God coming down and giving us stuff, yeah, does not contradict this. In fact, it enmeshes within it and helps illuminate. And then the reason can, what is given to us, can then build upon that with principles that have already been determined through reason. For example, like argumentative logic, right? Mm. We can actually build upon that. And that's where the genius of people like Thomas Aquinas comes into play, because he doesn't throw away his reason. In fact, his reason becomes perfected because he goes up to the point of revelation, or rather of where reason goes, then he takes where revelation is, and then he builds upon that with that same reason that gets us up to a certain point.
I hear you in the point that you're making, that there have been some ancients, and the ones that we're talking about are ones that have made the history books, Socrates and Aristotle, for example, who have come to use their reason in a very good and powerful way. In other words, they did not know the Christian God. They did not receive that kind of grace that we're talking about, which is the light that lightens the intellect and strengthens the will. And yet they were able to use their God-given reason, by which, by virtue, everybody has, to come to great heights, even to know that God exists. That's we can know from the causes of things that certain things have to exist. However, here's my however: can people today, so inundated by the media culture that we live in today, in the midst of the milieu of the sexual revolution that began in the 1960s and the culture of death that has ensued from that, can people in our Western culture today who are living in this swamp that I just described, can they rise without God's grace and without faith to reason out things so clearly as some of these ancients have? That's my question to you, really quick. We have about 2 minutes left.
No, they can't. it's really a done deal. Without the foundation upon which we Western societies built, our education system, all this. I mean, when you take out that foundation, for a while, the framework still exists, but without that solid foundation, eventually it crumbles. You are left only with remnants of things building upon it. And some people think, wow, we're still progressing. The sciences and medicine and all this technology that we see, all this stuff pales in comparison to what we would really have if we keep the foundation and continue to build upon that. Because then, only then, can you soar to higher heights.
Bob, your last word on that subject.
Well, yeah, I agree with what John said. I think probably the first step is actually kind of a Socratic step. Mm-hmm. One of the great things that I admire about Socrates is that he insisted that he was not wise.
Yes.
And that took him. That was the first step towards wisdom for anybody.
So humility is the first step.
Yes.
What is that saying?
Humility is the gateway to knowledge.
Only the foolish think they're wise, and only the wise believe they're foolish. And on the other end, only saints know that they're sinners, and sinners believe they're saints. So humility is the first step, ladies and gentlemen.
I believe so. Toward common sense.
Toward common sense and a life of virtue. Well, good way of wrapping the show up. I was wondering if we'd get there. We got there. We got beneath the surface. 11:15. That's our witching hour. We're going to turn into pumpkins here at BTS Radio. I want to thank everybody, including Cindy, who has a show on right after this. Don't you dare go away. Cindy's Vinyl Vault coming right up. Thank you, John Tudorus. One of my guests, Bob LeBlanc. Wonder which one or either of you are going to be here next week with me. I guess we will find out when it happens. I'm Paul Morano. This has been Beneath the Surface. You're listening to WCAP. Have a great week, everybody. And live in common sense.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
It's so much more than just a profile picture. At Catholic Singles, our platform offers you many opportunities to get to know the person behind the picture. Sign up today at CatholicSingles.com.
Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at KaneFord.com.